Leaning Toward Wisdom, episode 4084.
Person to person and man to man, I'm back in touch with my long lost friend. Listen to reason and understand, and think of me from way back when. He said, me and Melissa, well, we fell out of love, ran out of luck, seems like the lightning struck. I've been thinking of leaving, but I can't raise a buck. James, I'm wondering, could I borrow your truck? I said, that's why I'm here.
That's why I'm here.
Got no better reason. That's why I'm standing before you.
That's why I'm here.
That's why I'm here. John's gone, found dead. He dies high, he's brown bread. Later said to have drowned in his bed. After the laughter, the wave of dread, it hits us like a ton of lead. It seems learn not to burn means to turn on a dime. Walk on if you're walking, even if it's an uphill climb. Try to remember that working's no crime. Just don't let them take and waste your time. That's why I'm here.
That's why I'm here.
There'll be no more message tonight. That's why I'm here. That's
yes, of course. You know who he is. James Taylor from a 1985 CD that I own. That's Why I'm Here. It is the title track. You can buy it at Amazon, at Google Play, at iTunes. Last I checked, $9.99, and you should buy it. Me, I bought the CD in 1985 when it came out. It also serves as the title for today's show. That's Why I'm Here. Well, I'm not here because of the way James Taylor is here. He acknowledges in the song, he's here to sing his song, so let's let him do that.
Baby, got your blanket, got your bucket of beer. I break into a grin from ear to ear, and suddenly it's perfectly clear. That's why I'm here.
That's why I'm here.
Singing tonight, tomorrow, every day. That's why I'm standing.
That's why I'm here.
Oh, that's why I'm here. This is the part about Kenny and Bill. He loved her and she loved him. Wake 'em up, shake 'em up, the middle of the night. You got to tell me everything's alright. I say, that's why I'm here.
That's why.
So man, that's why I'm here.
That's why I'm here.
That's why I'm here. That's right.
James Taylor, excuse me. James Taylor, he says, choking half to death. Yes, that cough that seems to be prevalent worldwide. I have it. No, that's not why I'm here. It's why the cough is here. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. I'm glad that you're here. I'm here to bring you, in part, good music. And most of it, I don't know, is that true? Maybe. I started to say most of it to bring to mind kind of some old tunes. I am going to do that today. I will warn you, this is going to be a John Prine intensive day because I'm in a John Prine kind of mood. Are you moody? You get in moods? No, I don't mean a funk. I mean a mood. Just a mood. John Prine, for all of his snarkiness and sarcasm, I think most people would acknowledge can be a guy who... Well, some people have called it depressing. I don't find it depressing, but when I do get in a blue kind of a mood, Prine's the guy. He is the guy. and I confess I own every record he has made. Started to say I may own everything that James Taylor has done, but Taylor has done some, hasn't he done like multiple greatest hits? I'm not a guy who buys the greatest hits because I will have bought the stuff prior to that, so it kind of seems redundant. But I've got an awful lot of James Taylor stuff, and I do have everything that John Prine did. So today, expect some John Prine stuff. And if you don't know who John Prine is, you will by the end of the show. Why? That's why I'm here. Why are you here? Simon Sinek wrote a book, Start With Why. He wasn't the first guy to come up with that seemingly novel idea. In the book, best as I recall, which I read a long, long time ago when it came out. I still have it. Probably should reread it. But in the book, I remember he made an argument about various companies and success being catapulted because some companies just had a more clearly defined why. They had a purpose. They knew why they were doing something, and that why changed everything. He's made a career. He's carved out a nice niche for himself, being kind of the why guy. Other people have asked the question. Maybe he has spent more time distilling it better than most. Purpose is really what it amounts to. Now, I am a Christian, and I make no apologies for it. And I have never had a single day, certainly in my more mature life. I don't mean when I was a little kid, but I've never had a day where I wondered, why am I here? I know other people have. I haven't. Being a Christian, I know why I'm here. Now, brace yourself. I'm liable to offend, and I don't mean to offend. I'm simply telling you where I'm coming from and why I'm here. And granted, this is the big picture. Yeah, we'll hone this down as we go along here, but you knew I would. I believe in the Genesis record. I believe in the creation story recorded in Scripture. Yes, that God created the world and God created mankind and he created us for his glory. Well, there you have it. How hard was that? Not hard. Not hard. So that's why I'm here. Well, what does that mean? It means I'm here for God's good pleasure. It means I'm here to do what God would have me to do. And yes, I believe in the redemption story as well. I believe in the gospel of Christ, and I believe that Jesus came and died for the sins of mankind. And if we will obey the Lord, yes, he will save us in heaven. And if we don't obey the Lord, he will not. We will be condemned forever. That's what the Scriptures say. I believe it. You may not. That's your prerogative. Because that's the other thing. The God that created us gave us the choice. Now, I'm not going to preach. That's it. I'm done, okay? But it does answer for me the question why I'm here. Now, we want a more sophisticated answer than that. I know we do. We want something more strategic, something more tactical, something more practical than that, because every day, what does that mean? Okay, you're going to obey God and you're going to live this faith-based life, but how? How are you going to do that? What are you going to do with your occupation? What are you going to do with your family? What are you going to do when it just comes to the daily chores of living? What's your why when it comes to that? And I freely admit that there are kind of these two different tracks that we can traverse, especially those of us that are like me, where faith drives you down kind of the main thoroughfare. But, yes, I have to make a living. Being a Christian is a vocation. But it's not an occupation, so, okay, we've got to have an occupation. We have to make a living, and okay, what does that look like? What's your why when it comes to that? whether you're a faith-based person or not, you have various convictions and beliefs and a mindset. You have a philosophy. You have a way of living your life that I would hope is a way that you have decided, not just something that you have acquiesced to, but could be. There are things that you will do, and there are things that you absolutely will not do. Most of us, for instance, we find ourselves in a need for money. We get jobs. We do something honest in order to gain income. But there are people, there is this subculture among us that the thing that leaps to their mind is to go rob a convenience store, go hold somebody up, go hijack a car. Most of us, thankfully, most of us, we have this code of conduct that we live by, and we won't violate it, even under duress, hard times. But others will. And some, they don't even need hard times. They just, greed fuels their propensity to go and commit crime. So that's what I mean when I say we all have this kind of inner compass, if you please. Now, that inner compass is going to help us live a congruent life. So if you are a person who is given to personal conviction and living a life with some degree of integrity and honesty, there are things that you just won't do. And so those are off the table immediately. Those aren't even options for you. But that leaves open a vast array of other options. Honest work, well, the world is your oyster. Where are you going to begin? You could get any kind of a job at any kind of a place, making anywhere from minimum wage to more, depending on what skills you possess. So what are you going to do? And why are you going to do that? Why that, not this? And many of us will have to admit, at least at some point in our past, if not right now, our present, and perhaps in our future, there's a number of things that we could easily see ourselves doing. I've not met too many people. I've met a few, but I confess I have not met too many people who have said that they wanted to be this or that. They had this compelling why from the time they were small. I've met a few, but boy, I haven't met many. For most of us, life isn't nearly that kind of a linear thing. It's, you know, there's just a lot of trial and error, a lot of serendipity, just a lot of stuff like that. For many of us, our why, our purpose when it comes to an occupation is just so far removed from us.
As the cafe was closing on a warm summer night, Kathy was cleaning the spoons. The radio played the hit parade, and I hummed along with the tune. She asked me to change the station, said the song just drove her insane. But it weren't just the music playing, it was me she was trying to blame. And the sky is black and still now on the hill where the angels sing. Ain't it funny how an old broken bottle looks just like a diamond ring? But it's far, far from me. Well, I leaned on my left leg in the parking lot dirt. Kathy was closing the lights,
June bug flew from the warmth he once knew, and I wished for once I weren't right. While we used to laugh together, and we danced to any old song. Well, you know, she still laughs with me, but she waits just a second too long. And the sky is black and still now, on the hill where the angels sing. Ain't it funny? An old broken bottle looks just like a diamond ring. But it's far, far from me.
The year was 1971. John Prine. The record, John Prine. Name of the song, one of my all-time favorites, Far From Me. Some great lines. The man has a way with words. Others, not have way. You can buy it for $9.99. Some people say, well, you know, the boy can't sing. He can sing his songs, though. You know, it's kind of a Bob Dylan-ish kind of a thing. I mean, nobody's going to give him a vocal award, but the man can sing his own tunes. Far From Me, and sometimes our why, sometimes figuring all this out, figuring out what should we do with our life. Man, it can be far, far from us. Well, I don't want it to be far, far from me. I don't want it to be far, far from you. But sometimes such is the case, and it is why I hit record today, because I'm going to admit I've been wrestling a little bit with this. No, not from a faith perspective, not from an overall perspective. I'll admit to you, part of the challenge for me is I think there are any number of things that I could do, but I'm not real sure what I should do. And I Googled, as I am wont to do, and so are you, these, you know, various articles all across the internet on why. Here's one that was done in Forbes some years ago. Do you know your why? 4 questions to find your purpose. Well, as I said, I already know my purpose, but okay, in the context of what are you going to do for a living, what are you going to do in your daily life? What does that look like, and what does it look like? Well, as I rifle through these papers, I'll share with you the 4 questions that the author of this Forbes article, the questions that she poses. Number 1, what makes you come alive? What makes you come alive? Well, I don't know about you, but there are a number of things that make me come alive. My relationship with my wife. Well, okay. Turn that into a career. That's not real possible. I love my kids. I love my kids' families, my grandkids. Okay, well, that makes me come alive. How can I make that dog hunt? Okay, well, you can't. You can't. She writes, the word inspire comes from the Latin meaning to breathe life into. Accordingly, when you are working toward things that inspire you, it literally makes you feel more alive. And I just, well, did you hear that sound? What was that sound? I have no notifications turned. Sound like somebody hit some keys on a piano keyboard, didn't it? Am I hearing things? Hello, operator, would you trace this call and tell me where I am? What makes you come alive? Okay, let's think about this. What makes you come alive? I don't know. I'm stumped already, and I'm only at question number 1, and there's 3 more to go. Number 2, what are your innate strengths? Well, now this is going to demand perhaps a level of self-awareness that few of us possess. What are your innate strengths? I sometimes fear, do you have this fear? I sometimes fear that what I think might be my strengths might not be my strengths. I fear that I might be wrong. maybe that's a strength. Maybe that's an innate strength. An innate strength is, I think I know, but I really don't. No, I don't think that's a strength. I did have a friend who uses an assessment, some of his coaching materials, and he had me do a, let me see if I can find it here. He had me do an assessment, and it's a little bit analogous to the StrengthsFinders assessment. Well, not really, but it provides you 24 strengths. Similar but different. It is VIA Institute on Character. I would tell you what VIA stands for, but I don't know. VIA Institute on Character. And you want to know my top four? According to this. Now, you're going to be surprised because it's not going to be what you think. It's not going to be like communicator and relator and some of these other things like DISC Profile or StrengthsFinder has. These are different. Here's what my top four are. Number one, there's a sentence that explains each of these, so I'll share that with you. Number one, forgiveness. Forgiving those who have done wrong, accepting others' shortcomings, giving people a second chance, not being vengeful. That is my number one strength. Number two is honesty. Speaking the truth, but more broadly, presenting oneself in a genuine way and acting in a sincere way, being without pretense, taking responsibility for one's feelings and actions. That's number two for me. Number three, spirituality. Well, that doesn't shock you. Having coherent beliefs about the higher purpose and meaning of the universe, knowing where one fits within the larger scheme. Having beliefs about the meaning of life that shape conduct and provide comfort. Number four, humility. Letting one's accomplishments speak for themselves, not regarding oneself as more special than one is. I would give you the others, but that's enough. You get the idea. Well, I asked my buddy, I said, okay, tell me what this means. What does this mean? And I started comparing it to StrengthsFinders. He said, you can't really look at it that way. It's different. The way you have to look at this one, this is who you are when you get up every day. This is not something that you consciously decide. This is just the fabric of who you are. These four, and there are others. There's 24 of them, but these are the things as you start at the top and work your way down. Those at the top, they're compelling. They're overpowering. They're just part of you. I thought that was interesting. So number two, what are your innate strengths? Well, am I to believe that? Am I to believe DISC? Am I to believe StrengthsFinders? Am I to kind of composite all of these together? I don't know. I think I know what my innate strengths are. And I think perhaps the operative word there is innate. How are you wired? What's your natural tendency? My natural tendency is clearly to communicate. I mean, you don't have two podcasts going if you're not got some kind of a drive or desire to communicate. So I clearly have that. I've commented before that in other assessments, empathy is off the charts. I attend a funeral yesterday of a close friend, a church friend, and his mother passed away after a couple of week illness. She had pneumonia. That's only important because she was 99 years old. I didn't know her, really. I mean, not well, and attended this funeral. She was Hispanic, and most of the service was done in Spanish, which I don't speak. But that was not important. I went there to support him and to support his family. And as these people were being choked up because of the death of this woman, church-going lady, I cried. I shed some tears. You know, just seeing other people upset, seeing the pain and the heartache in other people, it affects me. It touches me. My buddy, by the way, who gave me that assessment said, the thing that you need to really understand is we all can have strengths that are so strong they become liabilities, they become weakness. And of course, he singled out forgiveness. He said, like, forgiveness, evidently not hard for you. And he's right. It's not. My mind just doesn't naturally go toward vengeance or revenge. I just don't think about getting even with it. Just never crosses my mind. But he asked me a pretty good question. He said, yeah, but what about forgiving yourself? And I'm going, well, now that's a different matter. So he said, see, there you go. So it's a strength, but at some point it's a strength that can kind of backfire on you if you have trouble forgiving yourself, which I do. What are your innate strengths? The author of this Forbes article cites Sir Ken Robinson's book, The Element. And if you've not read that book, you should. The Element by Sir Ken Robinson. Sir Ken, it's as good a definition as I know of for our element. Means, boy, that guy, he's really in his element, you know? That's how he uses that term. And he describes it as the point where natural talent and skill meet personal passion. It's where the two intersect. And if you can find that, then you're in your element. You're in your flow. It's a good place to be. And when you get there, well, let's let John Prine sing it. I mean, when you get there, it's a good time.
Time was once just a clock to me, and life was just a book, a biography. Success was something you just had to be, and I would spend myself unknowingly. And you know that I could have me a million more friends, and all I'd have to lose is my point of view. But I had no idea what a good time would cost till last night when I sat and talked with you. An apple will spoil if it's been abused. A candle disappears when it's been used. A rainbow may follow a beam. Hurricane, and I can't leave forever on a train. But you know that I'd survive if I never spoke again, and all I'd have to lose is my vanity. But I had no idea what a good time would cause till last night when you sat with me.
1973, John Prine's second album, Sweet Revenge. Name the song is A Good Time. Also available for $9.99 anywhere digital downloads are sold. You need to buy, if you don't buy this or individual ones, you at least need to buy one of his live records or one of his greatest hits. It's good stuff. It may not be everyday kind of stuff, but it's good stuff.
You can smile for the lack of something else to do, and no one will laugh and point at you. If your tears didn't always make me feel so bad, would you still cry every time that you felt sad? Well, I thought I heard him sing enough to get along till you said something neither of us knew. And I had no idea what a good time would cost till last night when I sat and talked with you.
John Prine, Sweet Revenge, 1973. For under $10, it can be yours. So the second question asked by the Forbes article is, what are your innate strengths? What are the things that you, she writes, what are the things you've always been good at, sometimes wondering why others find it so hard? I don't know about you, but I have long, especially when it comes to athleticism, which is kind of the easy one, right? And it's not like I want to be a pro athlete or ever did, but when you look at people that are so naturally talented, so naturally athletic, especially at the professional level, and it seems to come more easily to them, especially those that are real superstars. And you just think, man, how great would it be to just, for something to just come so natural, to just know this is your element. I haven't known anything like that. Have you? And of course, then you look at the subset that is the professional athlete of all sports, and you realize what a small, 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 itty bitty part of the population that is. Now, take another subset of that group, the superstars, and what a ridiculously low number that is, and you realize, I don't know. I don't know if there's any statistical proof there or not. But if you take the 7.4 billion people on the planet and then you take all of those who are professional athletes and what a minuscule number that is, and now take the minuscule number of that population that are really terrific, I mean, that are just superstars at their sport, it's like, man, alive. Is it possible that there are that few of us that are just naturally inclined where we are just so gifted at something that just comes so easily? Or is it the fact that we're just not in touch with it? Is it a fact that we just don't know maybe what it is? Have you ever been nagged by the thought that there might be something that you aren't doing right now that you're kind of naturally gifted at, but because you've never tried it, you have no way to know? Has that ever crossed your mind? Crosses mine. Well, it doesn't cross. Listen, don't get me wrong. I'm not thinking that, oh, I would be spectacular at something. It just does make you wonder. Went to dinner last night with some people, and they were commenting about how their son is a real talented guitar player. I said, well, did he take lessons? No, self-taught. And my wife asked, well, is everybody in the family musical? Yeah, there's some musical ability in the family. You know, there's one or two of us that don't have a whole lot, but kind of, sort of. It's interesting, isn't it? And then there are other people that, you know, they grew up in a family where music was being played all the time. Parents were musical. Maybe they had a musical career. And of course, how can the kids help but be anything but influenced by that? Yesterday, as I hit the record button, today is Tuesday, January the 19th, 2016. Glenn Frey passed away yesterday. One of the co-founders of the Eagles. Well, he's considered a co-founder, he and Don Henley. There were four of them together. Randy Meisner, he's been gone from the group for a while. Bernie Ledden, he toured with them this last tour, which that was nice. But he walked away some years ago, kind of went back to his bluegrass roots. Yeah, four guys in California back in the 70s. Glenn Frey, dead at the age of 67, grew up playing piano, quickly realized piano doesn't get chicks, so played the guitar, left Detroit, went to Southern California, hooked up with a guy named Jackson Brown and a gal named Linda Ronstadt, and the rest is history. Dallas guy, Don Henley, released a statement that was, you know, very kind, commented how they were kind of brothers and how meeting Glenn Frey changed his life. Well, of course it did. And Glenn Frey meeting Don Henley changed his life too. So tit for tat. Interesting, isn't it? Interesting how these people found wild success, seem to have discovered their innate strengths, and seem to have tapped those innate strengths, seem to have, Sir Ken puts it, I would certainly argue they found their element, as did the other members of the Eagles, Timothy B. Schmidt and Joe Walsh, guys who, yeah, they found their element. Obviously, we're passionate about these kinds of things. The third question asked by the author of this article is, where do you add the greatest value? Now, again, I go back to the argument of this self-awareness. So we have question number one, what makes you come alive? Question number two, what are your innate strengths? Question number three, where do you add the greatest value? Well, at least the last two require a high degree of self-awareness, don't they? Where do you add the greatest value? She writes, doing work that you're good at, but which you loathe, is not a pathway to fulfillment. That said, knowing your greatest strengths and where you can add the most value through the application of your education, skills, knowledge, and experience can help you focus on the opportunities, roles, and career paths where you are most likely to succeed and therefore find the greatest sense of accomplishment and contribution. The questions don't get easier, do they? I mean, they don't seem to get easier to me. This is one of the better songs by John Prine. There's so many of them, but this is one that a lot of people rave about. A sad song, I'll warn you up front. It's One Red Rose.
Rain came down on a tin roof. Hardly a sound was left from the birthday party. The kitchen light fell asleep on the bedroom floor. Well, me and her were talking softer than all the time before I lost her. Picture set on top of the chest of drawers. One red rose in the Bible. Pressed between the holy alphabet. Probably wouldn't believe you if you told me, but what I never knew I never will forget. Rainy nights get dark real early. Her dress was soft, her hair was curly. We danced around the table to the old banjo. Rainy nights were made for lovers. We lay there still beneath the covers. I ain't never felt like that before. One red rose. Battle pressed between the holy alphabet. Probably wouldn't believe you if you told me, but what I never knew I never will forget.
From a 1980 record that I could not find anywhere. It is not in iTunes, and I don't know why. It's like one record. The name of the record is Storm Windows. The name of the song is One Red Rose. You can buy it on a Greatest Hits record, but Storm Windows is a CD that I bought in 1980. One Red Rose.
Best between holy alphabet. Probably wouldn't believe you if you told me, but what I never knew I never will forget. What I never knew I
Question number three, where do you add the greatest value? As I was sitting in this funeral home chapel, and there was a good crowd. It's usually sad when someone has reached the age of 99, and obviously they have, for the most part, outlived their peers. But their children and their grandchildren and their friends, if they've had an impact in a community or with a group of people, then, yeah, sometimes the crowd shows up for them, obviously. But it was evident that this woman had touched the lives of some people because there were some big old boys in there, let me tell you, that were couldn't have been out of their 30s or 40s who were notably upset, notably touched by the death of this woman. And as I sat there and I watched this, because I didn't understand a word being said, you know, I picked up a one word here and there, but my mind began to wonder. And as I looked around that room, and I was seated about three quarters of the way back, and so I'm looking at this largely Hispanic crowd, obviously, and a few of us that were not sitting there. And I'm looking at these people, and I'm surveying this room, and I'm thinking of the impact that this woman had and the impact that we all have. And you realize it's a pretty small circle of people that really know us and other people that we really know. Now, I understand David Bowie died last week. Glenn Frey died yesterday. And these celebrities are going to have massive, massive shows of sympathy. But by and large, people that listen to their music, I'm sad that Glenn Frey is gone. I've got a ton of their records, but I didn't know him. I mean, the most I knew of him was that documentary that was done on the Eagles that frankly did not depict him as a terribly kind person, very driven. Really got into it with Don Felder. I mean, that was kind of an ugly scene. Mercurial, I think, is how Don Henley described Glenn Frey in yesterday's release that he put out. But there were people that knew him. There were people that loved him. There were people that called him son, perhaps a brother. I don't know his family situation. Maybe father, husband. I don't know. May have had grandkids. I don't know. There's the rub. He's someone that I knew, but he didn't know me, and I didn't know much about him. And when I was looking at this room during this funeral, and I'm realizing, no, not everybody that this woman touched was in that room. No doubt some people couldn't attend, but it was a pretty large crowd there. And you realize kind of the scope and scale of your life, albeit those of us that aren't celebrities, but even the celebrities. I mean, don't you imagine that even the celebrities, I wonder what the average, is there such a thing as an average celebrity? I mean, you take somebody like Glenn Frey. I mean, how many people were really, really close to the guy, do you think? I mean, if the guy could have written down a list of people and said, these are the most important people in my life, I wonder how big that list would be. I doubt it would be very big, do you? For this lady who passed away, I imagine her list was fairly short. Is yours? Where do you add the greatest value? For me, it's not so much where as in what do I do. I have argued long and loud, and people take issue with me about this. Every time I talk about this, people take issue with me. So I'm fully prepared for you to take issue with me, perhaps, that my why is really more of a who. Now, here's the criticism I get. The criticism I get is, well, everybody's is a who. You know, I mean, we all love our families and blah, blah, blah. Acting as though that's, you know, it's got to be something else. It's got to be something else. for me, there's the hard part, and it's a big reason for hitting record today. The hard part for me is separating the two. I'm so compelled and I'm so driven by the who. Some have argued that, well, you're not really getting to your true why because you can't get past the who. Guilty as charged. Where do you add the greatest value? The author writes, too often we undervalue our strengths, skills, and expertise we naturally acquire over time. If you reframe the concept of adding value through the lens of solving problems, you can ask yourself what you're well-placed and equipped to help solve in your workplace, career, organization, or industry. One place where I know I seem to add value is I get the phone call. People have some difficulty, some problem. I get the phone call. I'm that guy. And I love being that guy. Now, I don't love it that people have problems. Don't get me wrong. But I love that when people do want to call someone, I'm that guy. I fully embrace that. And that's the first thing that comes to my mind with this third question. Where do you add the greatest value? I don't know that that's where I add the greatest value, but it's where I add some value in being that guy. It's one reason that the tagline at my website, my work site, which is growgreat.com, it's a website for Bula Network, LLC. Bula Network is a CEO, business owner, executive coaching consultancy, kind of a boutique thing. And the tagline is every leader needs somebody that they can be transparent with. I'm that guy. And I am that guy. I truly am that guy. I hope it's where I add some value. I'm not sure about that word greatest. See, that kind of trips me up.
Standing by peaceful waters, standing by peaceful waters. Many years ago, along the Illinois-Wisconsin border, there was this Indian tribe. They found two babies in the woods, white babies. One of them was named Elizabeth. She was the fairer of the two, while the smaller and more fragile one was named Marie. Having never seen white girls before, and living on the two lakes known as the Twin Lakes, they named the larger and more beautiful lake Lake Elizabeth. And thus the smaller lake that was hidden from the highway became known forever as Lake Marie. We were standing, standing by peaceful waters, standing by peaceful waters. Many years later, I found myself talking to this girl who was standing there with her back turned to Lake Marie. The wind was blowing, especially through her hair. There was four Italian sausages cooking on the outdoor grill, and they was sizzling. Many years later, we found ourselves in Canada trying to save our marriage and perhaps catch a few fish. But whatever came first, that night she fell asleep in my arms, humming the tune to Louie Louie. Oh, baby, we gotta go now. We were standing, standing by peaceful waters.
standing by peaceful waters. Standing by peaceful waters.
It's from a 1995 record. Lost Dogs and Mixed Blessings. The name of the song is Lake Marie.
Nay, naked bodies. Their faces have been horribly disfigured by some sharp object. I saw it on the news, the TV news, in a black and white video. You know what blood looks like in a black and white video? Shadows. Shadows! That's what it looks like. All the love we shared between her and me was slammed. Slammed up against the banks of old Lake Marie. Marie! We were standing. Standing by peaceful waters. Standing by peaceful waters. Whoa, 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 peaceful waters. Standing by peaceful waters. Oh, baby. We gotta go now.
Yeah, this record too is available at iTunes for $9.99. Lost Dogs and Mixed Blessings. From 1995, he is John Prine. The song is Lake Marie. Have I put you in a John Prine mood today? By now, you can kind of get a sense of what a John Prine mood is all about. You kind of have to listen to these songs a few times, and as with most good music, it just kind of puts you in a place. And even though he tells a story, you end up kind of crafting your own story. I think that's what good music does. It resonates with us. It puts us in a place and we can kind of craft our own narrative. I mean, sometimes the songs are real clear that you understand what the story is about, but you still kind of fill in the gaps, don't you? Using your own imagination. So question number three was, where do you add the greatest value? That word greatest, like I said, that trips me up, I freely confess. Question number four, so it's four out of four. How will you measure your life? How will you measure your life? And of course, she writes the ever famous line, people who don't stand for anything can easily fall for anything. People who don't stand for something can easily fall for anything. Well, I know what I stand for, don't you? I think you probably do. You know what you stand for. You probably even know what you stand against. It doesn't mean that you can really easily answer this question, though. How will you measure your life? Okay, pardon me. Let me get back in the pulpit and speak at least just a tad more about spiritual things. I know how my life is going to be measured. If you believe in a life after this life, if you believe in judgment, if you believe in eternity, then you're okay. That's how life is going to be measured. I don't know who he is. I came across the YouTube video, I remember, four or so years ago. Kind of one of these hipster preachers, blue jean wearing, you know, real casual approach, but a pretty good speaker. And he drags on stage this really, really long white rope. And it's got a handle on the end of it that's about 3 or 4 inches long, maybe 4 inches long. And he said, this right here, and he's holding the handle. This represents your life here. And then this big, long strand of rope, that's eternity. And we put all of our focus, all of our attention right here on this handle. And so he gets a pen or something, and he points to some specific spot on that handle. And he said, we think, okay, right here, I'm going to get this education. It's going to lead to this job. Then right here, right at this one little spot, that's life's going to take a grand turn for the better, you know, for me. And we're focused on that one little spot on this 4-inch handle. When meanwhile, we've got this whole rope ahead of us. No focus, no attention on eternity. Good illustration, I thought. I agree with him. So how will you measure your life? I know. So I'm sitting in this funeral yesterday. I'm thinking about the passing of Glenn Frey. We can think about all the music and we think about everything else, but what's the measure of our life really going to be? What difference is it really going to have made? If, like me, you're a Christian, if, like me, you believe in God and you believe in serving God, there's the measurement. Now, I understand the context of this. The context of all this is far more, as many people would put it, practical. Practical. So I know what I stand for, but I can stand for that and pursue any number of professional endeavors. I mean, one reason that I do executive kind of coaching and consulting is to help people. Little doubt, no doubt. So some have told me, well, you need to wrestle more with that. You need to really wrestle that down to the ground, this serving leaders. The elephant in the room for me, pardon the trite phrase that I seem to use far too often, by the way, is serving leaders because leaders are serving other people. By serving leaders, I realize that I can have a bigger impact. Because my life has been impacted by leaders, both good and bad. And I freely admit I've had probably more bad ones than good ones, but the good ones outweighed the bad ones, and so there. So if you're a leader, let's say that you're a leader of a 300-person organization, there's 300 people that may not be directly impacted by you and your work, but they are impacted by your work very indirectly. They're impacted by your work, by your leadership, by the culture that you create, just by the way that you roll. So I have found it very rewarding to work for a leader who in turn has all these people to serve. That's a pretty broad influence. I personally am kind of on a mission. I want people to work for good people. I want people to work for good leaders. I want people to work for good people that can bring the best out in them. People who can help them. People who will support them. But I'm a big believer in servant leadership. I don't happen to think there's any other kind. I don't. If there is, I don't know about it. I think the role of a leader is to serve the people in the organization, however large or small that organization may be, whether that organization is a business and a for-profit or whether it's a nonprofit or whether it's a family, to benefit the others. If that's not the role of the leader, then I don't know why the leader exists. What do we need a leader for? If we're not benefited by the presence of a leader, what do we need them for? So there. What's your why? What questions do you ask? I've come across others that I think I've mentioned before, if not here at the other podcast, and that is, what do you think about? I'm pretty fond of these kinds of questions to try to figure out why I'm here, or to answer my why. What do you think about? What do you think about the most? Good question. where do you spend your time? What do you spend your time doing the most? And third, how do you spend your money? Where does your money go? Those three things can kind of help us define our why. I think those three things coupled with these four, it's as good a start as any. I'm not saying it gives us all of the answers. I do believe this, and you see this and you read it over and over and over, that we really need to come to terms with this. Here's why this is important. Because it gives us sustaining power. In the face of adversity, when problems come, it's got to be about something significant. It's got to be about something substantial. It can't be chasing money. It can't be chasing fame, celebrity. I mean, there's got to be some compelling reason, or so people argue. I don't know if that's true. I've heard Mark Cuban say through the years that early on his passion was to get rich. Mission accomplished. Well, other people, they have that passion and they don't accomplish it. So why did he accomplish it? Well, we could argue a variety of things. Good timing. Made the right connections at the right time. A little bit of luck. Maybe a lot of serendipity. I don't know. But mission accomplished. Passion was to get rich. And sometimes these are hard things to figure out because, you know, it's just, hey, it's the way that the world goes.
I got glue on my string. That's the way that the world goes round.
Lot to lose. He's a pretty nice fella, kinda confused. Got muscles in his head, ain't never been used. Thinks he owns half of this town. Starts drinking heavy, gets a big red nose. Beats his old lady with a rubber hose. Then he takes her out to dinner, buys her new clothes. That's the way that the world goes round. That's the way that the world goes round. Be up one day, next you down, it's a happening to water. You think you're gonna drown. That's the way that the world goes round. I was sitting in the bathtub, counting my toes when the radiator broke. Water all froze, I got stuck in the ice without my clothes, naked as the eyes of a clown. I was crying ice cubes, hoping I'd grow, but when the sun come through the window, the ice all broke. I stood up and laughed, thought it was a joke, that's the way.
From a 1978 record, Bruised Orange, that's the way that the world goes round. And it is the way the world goes round. We have to figure this out. We got to make our own way. I think for me, the lesson really is we just have to own it, whatever it is and however we roll. Now, I'm not saying that you should accept your weaknesses and not try to shore them up. I think for me, leaning toward wisdom is about trying to be the best version of myself that I can be and to embrace who I really am and to just own it and to just realize, for me, it's about being congruent with who I am, whatever my natural tendencies are, to make those strengths and to go with it. Be the best person that I can be. My name is Randy Cantrell. Thanks for listening. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. Let's finish with one more track, shall we? And you'll like this one. I think you'll like this one. I hope you liked that last one. John Prine came on the scene, discovered by Kris Kristofferson. Kristofferson got dragged to a little joint where John, I think, had played. And the place was empty. Place was shut down. And I think if the story serves me right, if I'm accurate, Kristofferson's people had dragged him to see John Prine, who I think at the time was like 19. I mean, he was a kid, really young kid. And he played a song, Sam Stone, and Sam Stone was about a Vietnam vet who came back damaged. And Kristofferson was just blown away that a young kid, a teenager, could write a song like an old man. And John has kind of been considered an old soul. He is old now, but even back when he was a kid, maybe that was why I could easily relate to him back in 1971 when I first heard that song. I'm not going to play that one. It's real depressing. But that's a bit of the kinship, I guess. I admire his wordsmithing. I admire his just kind of everyday demeanor. And I admire the fact that he's just kind of an old soul. I've always kind of felt myself to be a bit of an old soul. So there is that. There is that in my why. And I think those are kinds of important things for us to acknowledge and to have a bit of self-awareness about. But this song is a song that's, I think, one that we can all kind of hang our hat on. The name of the song is called How Lucky. It's from an album in 1978 called Pink Cadillac. How Lucky. And the chorus is, how lucky can one man get? And I think for me, it just focuses my mind on all the things that I really should be thankful for, as opposed to sitting around being preoccupied, as we often are, about the things that we don't have, the things that we lack. But what about the things we do have? What about all the blessings that we've got? I don't know that it's lucky so much as it's blessing, but I get it nonetheless. And so enjoy. John Prine from Pink Cadillac. The song is How Lucky.
I used to wander, yeah, shook my hand, and I made myself a bed. Well, there was all these things that I don't think I remember. Hey, how lucky can one man get? I brushed my shoes and I hung them from a rearview mirror. Brian's admiration in a blind spot of a grid. Well, there was all these things that I don't think I remember. I walked down a street I used to wander. Yeah, scratched my head and I lit my cigarette. There was all these things that I don't think I remember. I walked down a street I used to wander. Yeah, shook my hand and made myself a bed. Well, there's all these things that I don't think I remember. Thank you.